Welcome to the Niche Podcast, your weekly rundown of the biotech, clinical research, and life science industries. I'm your host, Dr. Noah Goodson. This week, Amgen nabs Five Prime Therapeutics and $1.9 billion deal. KimPharm ligates their way out of debt with ADHD. Three failed COVID-19 pipelines. And Colfax follows 2019 merger with corporate split. Five Prime Therapeutics has been acquired by Amgen in a deal valued at $1.9 billion. The clinical stage immuno-oncology company has been developing a suite of targeted oncological therapies. Their lead product, bemarituzumab, is entering phase 3 clinical trials for advanced gastric and gastroesophageal junction cancer. Bemarituzumab has relatively promising phase 2 clinical trial data, but it's also a first-in-class anti-FGFR2b receptor antibody. In certain cancers, fibroblast growth factors bind to FGFR2b and can drive pro-tumor signaling pathways. Bemarituzumab blocks this interaction and may allow for more effective chemotherapy as the spread of cancer is dramatically inhibited. Practically, this provides a lot of promise for a multi-indication oncological product. Long run, in the clinic, it's likely that bemarituzumab will be an accompanying therapy to a range of other treatments, giving it significant use potential. Particularly as the oncology field increases genetic testing regimes to drive the use of targeted oncological products. Bemarituzumab accounts for the bulk of the price tag, but Amgen could have just done a biobucks pipeline license. So why didn't they? I think there are a couple of reasons. First, they probably see some meaningful promise in the early clinical and preclinical data from Five Prime's other products. I think they also see the potential long-term royalties on bemarituzumab as exceeding the cost of a direct buy. Basically, by the time they spend $800 million to $1.2 billion for licensing and milestones and then pay a meaningful royalty stream, they've spent more money and mitigated less risk. I see this deal as making sense, assuming bemarituzumab has robust clinical promise. KimPharm has received FDA approval for Asteris to treat ADHD in patients 6 years old and older. KimPharm works in a super niche section of biopharma, prodrugs. Prodrugs are compounds that are already approved but may be poorly absorbed or processed. To make a product, the existing pharmaceutical is converted to a novel therapeutic by ligating a biologically digestible chemical chain to create a novel compound that can be returned to its original active form by the body. The idea is that the new ligation improves delivery, absorption, release time, or decreases symptoms. These redesigns have to go through the same safety and efficacy testing as any other pharmaceutical. But when they work, it allows a new, old drug to re-enter the market. Functional prodrugs are metabolized in the body to become their active form. Asteris contains the prodrug serdexamethylphenidate, SDX, and the drug dexamethylphenidate, DMPH, at a 70-30 ratio. Upon consumption, DMPH is immediately active, while SDX is slowly metabolized to DMPH, providing extended function of Asteris. DMPH, of course, has been approved to treat ADHD for years under the brand name Focalin. KimPharm created SDX by ligating additional chemical chains to extend the release and create XDS. The reimagining of extant therapies through the creation of prodrugs is KimPharm's niche. However, in the last few years, they've cranked up significant debt, with totals closing in on $100 million last year, compared to just $12 million in assets. Asteris' FDA approval certainly represents a big step forward. They also got the green light on an additional IND in late January. I think they probably still have a ways to go to dig out of their current hole. They can either scrape their current line along until cash starts flowing, or try to turn new products into option deals that bring cash positive flow. Either way, they were in a rough spot in 2019. Today, they may be on the road to meaningful recovery and expansion of a new prodrug market within biopharma. Developing a new product in the biopharma space is incredibly challenging. There are design barriers, capital to raise, and regulatory hurdles. The SCOPE method provides consultative solutions to navigate industry-specific challenges. We've helped companies pivot into new therapeutic spaces, change trajectory through clinical insights, and empowered CEOs with tools to transform their data into stories that raise capital. The SCOPE method will help you develop data-driven, strategic processes. Find out more at thescopemethod.com. In the interview with Dr. Matrani last week, we spoke about the development of COVID-19 therapies. Numerous companies, for both fiscal and moral reasons, have dug through their vaults to identify potential COVID-19 therapeutics. Since many of these studies started early on in the pandemic, knowledge about COVID-19 disease was limited, and there were inherently risky endeavors. This week, three more investigational programs have been shuttered. Apellis Pharma closed their study of candidate APL-9 as an acute intervention. Their lead product, pegcetacoplan, remains in ongoing phase 3 studies for various indications in hematology, nephrology, and ophthalmology. Medicinova closed down a COVID-19 vaccine program. The company still has a huge range of therapeutics in phase 2, 3 trials, and the COVID-19 vaccine was definitely a sideshow from their main line of inquiry. Earlier this year, they closed a $20 million private stock deal with a private Singapore-based hedge fund to develop clinical research on their MN-166 and MN-001 investigational treatments. Brii Biosciences closed down its COVID-19 antibody program for both investigational products. Their data and safety monitoring board determined there was no evidence of efficacy. Launching in mid-2018 with $260 million, it's no surprise that Brii's pipeline is still predominantly in preclinical through phase 2 clinical trials. Colfax Corporation became a massive "we make stuff" conglomerate after the acquisition of DJO for $3.15 billion in 2019. The corporation made everything from orthopedic devices and those boots you see on anyone with a broken foot to the entire ESAB line, which is a leading manufacturer of welding and manufacturing equipment, and also like everything else. While certain expertise in product lines are in alignment, there are clear market differences between medical devices and sundries and industrial supplies. The split feels like a long-planned move that probably only got punted till now because of the pandemic. The basic strategy was acquire, consolidate, divide, conquer. The split will create a medical device corporation with revenues in excess of $1.4 billion annually and a manufacturing corporation with $2.2 billion in revenue. It should allow the corporations to focus on their respective markets and avoid lumbering behemoth syndrome. I doubt this is the end of it either. With shifts in medical supply and device pipelines happening across the market, there's definitely room for further acquisitions or combined divest and acquire moves. Keep your eyes out for those to get lined up in 2022 when the Colfax split has been fully actualized. Thanks for joining me on the Niche Podcast, your weekly summary of the top news in the biotech, clinical trials, and life science industries. You can learn more at thenichepod.com or find us on your favorite podcast app. Like, comment, subscribe, and most of all, share with your friends. If you like what you hear, please rate and review. It really helps us. Once again, I'm Dr. Noah Goodson, and I'll see you next week.